Soy Power Podcast is a free podcast made possible by the support of our awesome Patreon sponsors. Head to toypowerpodcast.com and see how you can help.
Oh yeah, this is power.
Hello and welcome to Toy Power. This is the podcast where we talk toys and everything pop culture. Hi, I'm Trent, and it's really great to have your company today for episode...
What number are we thinking of? 69, dudes!
This week on Toy Power, we take a look at any topics that hit up our soapbox episode. We then dive into a new segment, which is taking a look at what's on the pegs in the toy stores. And we're going to finish with another installment of The Toys That Should Have Been. With me today, I've got Frank.
Hello.
Darren.
Hello, one and all. Thank you for joining us.
And Ben is absent in action today for this episode. There is, at the time of recording this episode, a royal wedding going on. Is there anything that Ben hasn't been telling us?
No. I reckon he had to wait up really hard. Did he come here and talk toys with his friends, or did he watch Meghan Markle and Prince Harry walk down the aisle? And I guess we just didn't make the final cut.
We're not good enough.
No, we...
You heard it here on Toy Power first.
I don't think we should be too hurt, really. I mean, you know... We may be the kings of toys, but we're not real royalty.
Oh, yes. We're not. All right. We might jump into our first segment. The soapbox.
Oh, goddammit.
If you've got something you want to get off your chest and let out, it's therapeutic.
It's kind of ridiculous that I can't do that.
Oh, my God. Kill me now. Like, it's just the worst.
It's insane.
And I love it.
Yeah, I've got about three or four of these soapboxes now waiting in the wings. I'm ready to blow up, basically. But we'll let someone else have a chat first. If there's anything... What's happening in retail? We're going to do the what's on the pegs a bit later on in this episode. But, Frank, you sort of had an explosive moment a couple of weeks ago when I think you had $100 to spend or a couple, you had some vouchers or something.
Yeah, and look, this is something Darren and I have been talking about... doing this as a bit of a joint soapbox at some point, so I'll give you a bit of a preview as to what we're thinking. But bottom line, I had $100 in my Skyrocket saying, right, I'm going to go get me some Marvel Legends. It was a week or so before Infinity War, so like, do you know what? The toys, they're going to be everywhere. I'd already seen evidence of that in my travels, and I went to the really large shopping center, Tea Tree Plaza, for those that know it, up my way. It's got about four or five different large retailers, at Kmart's and Big W and Myers and all this. And bottom line, I said, look, it's retail in Australia. I know I'm going to be disappointed because it's the sort of the stuff I'm after. If I just come home with a Captain America and a Deadpool, I'll be happy with that. Went around the whole place, you know, 25 minutes worth of walking here, there and everywhere, and came home with my $100 and nothing to show for it. Darren and I are going to delve into the reasons behind that, but I was, in the end, that $100 went to a store online where I got Captain America, Deadpool, and like two others for that same amount of money. So, yeah, that kind of really pissed me off, if I'm honest.
I think that's really sad. Obviously, not just that you couldn't get them, but just the Australian retail's at that point now, because this is something that you think about the amount of times we did this over the years, going into some of our favourite stores, Christmas money, birthday money, money we saved that ourselves, worked for, whatever, and used to be able to just buy toys off the shelf like it was nothing else in the world. And I guess for me, the context... This has been happening for a while, slow burn for a while, and I reflect on this a lot. Trent may even remember some of these stories. Back in the day, I used to frequently ring Mattel on their 1-800 number, saying, are you getting this DC Universe Classics wave? Are you getting this The Batman wave? Are you getting, you know, are you getting, you know, Dark Knight movie, Masters, whatever it was that I was looking for at the time.
Masters of the Universe? Masters When's the that universe, coming out here? Come on, yeah. It's been out in the States for a year.
Yes, yes. You name it. The Toys R Us, DC Universe versus Master Universe, Classics, 2-packs, all of it at different times. And usually after they give me their first question, how did you get this number?
Second statement, stop calling this number.
Yeah. Hi, Darren. Yeah.
funnily enough, on the back of the, your packaging from the 80s. But yeah, that's another story. But anyway, we'd get to the point and they would say, look, you know, we're getting this, and this. What you're looking for, you know, some of it they'd be getting, and then they'd say, try eBay. And that would be a response I'd get quite frequently, try eBay.
The fact that that's an official company response is just, that's pretty poor.
The towel has been thrown.
Yeah. I used to get it from not just a toy company like Mattel, but I used to get it from retailers like your Targets, your Big W's, your Kmart's, Toys R Us's, Toy World, Meijer, everyone. It used to be a frequent response if they're not stocking something, try eBay. Then it magically went away overnight, and when retailers launched into their we're wanting what's the campaign, you know, the campaign for the GST on imported goods, they wanted a level playing field. The moment Gerry Harvey and a number of other high profile Australian retailers launched that campaign, suddenly that try eBay died, like instantly overnight. No one, like, suddenly management said, you're not allowed to say that anymore, don't say it.
Yeah,
so they didn't.
They still didn't fix the problem.
For years, I was bitter and twisted, and I used to find that try eBay rubbing salt in the wound, because I used to think, well, I know about eBay. Of course I know about eBay. Everybody knows about eBay. I'm coming into your store or I'm ringing your toy company because I'd rather buy it locally and support local jobs. I just reached a point, it took me many years, and Trent will verify that, I just reached a point where I was suddenly at peace with the fact that retailers will stock what they want and not get what they want. And suddenly I was okay with that. And then it seemed like 5 minutes after I reached that serenity of being okay with it, it's like, we want a level playing field because you're just trying to dodge paying your tax. and suddenly I was no longer okay with them anymore.
And rightly so.
And it just came up, as I said, this is the preview of our soapbox. We haven't actually written anything for this. And listen to him go.
Yeah, if there's one thing I can wax lyrical about, it's a whinge. Seriously, I find it really sad because it shouldn't be this hard. And that's what I keep coming back to. It shouldn't be this hard. I want to buy a product. I've got some money. You're in the business of selling products. It shouldn't be this hard. You know, here's my money. Give me my product. You don't want to, that's fine.
But then don't complain when I go
and buy it from someone who will sell it to me.
Yeah, ridiculous.
All right. I'm going to give a soapbox now that is a line to that and sheds a bit more light on this picture of retail. This is at a different end of the spectrum in Australian retail, and it's at the specialty collector store. I'm not going to name the store, but I went into a specialty collector store here in Adelaide, and I've been going to that store for a while now because they sell a lot of Funko products. They've got Funko Pops lining the store. I mean, they could make a store out of Funko Pops. They could make their walls.
That's why you go there frequently, isn't it, Trent? Because you know that's your one-stop place for Funko Pops.
Yeah, exactly right. So I can light them up and put some gasoline on them.
Fill up your toy room.
But what I'm looking for, the other thing they have is the Saturday morning Disney cartoon line by Funko, which is Darkwing Duck and Scrooge McQuack and Chip and Dale and those sorts of things. So I thought, oh, well, these are Funko lines that they're stocking. They're going to stock the Funko Savage World figures, the first line being the Mortal Kombat X. So I've been going to the store, probably, I'm in the city anyway, so I go there probably once a week and just check it out. And, yep, check it out, nothing new, no Savage World. And I've been doing this with all the specialty stores, and the Funko Savage World figures haven't shown up. And I was about to leave this particular store when the person behind the counter said to me, oh, look, can I help you with anything? And I said, oh, no, I'm okay, I'm just looking. But actually, just tell me, are you getting in the Savage World figures by Funko? And she typed them into the computer, brought up an image that she could see, I couldn't see. And she said, oh, no, we've decided we're not placing an order for these because they're cheap. And I said, what? And it just set me back on a very defensive footing. And I said, sorry, what? They're cheap. And she's like, yeah, these are cheap figures. They don't sell well. We're not getting them in. And I said, wait a minute. They don't sell well. This is the first wave in Funko's line of Savage World figures. And the next line they're going to do is Thundercats. And that's done in like a master style. You know what these are? These are done in a master style. They're very nostalgic. I think these are going to be very popular. And she said, no, well, they look cheap. They're exactly the same as those reaction figures that Funko did, and they didn't sell well. And I'm like, what picture are you looking at here? Exactly the same? And I looked around. She had Liu Kang up on the screen, done in the very 5.5-inch Master of the Universe style. And I said, they're nothing like the reaction. Reaction are done in a Kenner style.
Yeah, straight up and down.
And these are done in a... You know what these are? These are done in a Master of the Universe style. And
she's a Mattel like, style.
Yeah, exactly.
And she said, well, look at this picture. They look cheap. They're simple designs like the Funko stuff. And the Funko stuff didn't sell well. These are not going to sell well, so we're not going to stock them. And I said, okay. Well, so I felt like really weird about this conversation. And I said, oh, well, like I said, Thundercats is coming soon. That's going to be a big hit. Yeah, you might want to think loss. About getting them in.
Mm.
And she's like, Thundercats don't sell. What, Thundercats don't sell? She's like, yeah, we had them in the store a couple of years ago and they just didn't sell. And I'm like, wait, you're talking about the relaunch. Okay, that didn't hit, but the original stuff is really popular. The stuff goes for crazy amounts on eBay. I think there's a market for this sort of thing. She's like, we couldn't sell it then. I don't think we'll be getting stuff in, but if you're interested in it, you know, let me know and I can place an order for you. And I said, look, I know that's okay. Like, I come here because it's a physical store. If I want to go online, I know where to go online to get it, to source it. So don't worry about ordering it in. I was just interested. And I'm really interested in this conversation because you are buying for your store and this is how you're selecting what product you choose. Mm. And I think this is like a really fascinating conversation because you have every right to pick what stock you want for your store. And I said, look, out of interest, has anyone else asked about these Savage World figures? And she said, no. And she said, it's not really our thing doing a Mortal Kombat line. Like, we think things that sell better are like the characters. So the Disney figures, like it's a character, it's not a human figure. Which I found really interesting because that's, she goes, if I get in NECA alien figures, the alien will sell first before the Marine sells. Right? That was what she was implying. Okay. Now, that's not my buying preference. I'm looking up at Frank's Marvel Legends collection, and they're all human-based characters. So I get that. Like, you get lines like Ninja Turtles and things like that where they are fantastical characters. But, yeah, it was just really interesting to hear some of these comments about the purchasing decisions that stores were making. And the conversation basically ended when she was saying this stuff wasn't selling. I said, well, I've got a real interest in like what's happening with Funko Pops at the moment. Because, you know, you've got you stock a lot of Funko Pops. How do they do for you?
Yeah.
And she said, Funko Pops sell really well when new stuff is released. Once it's kind of the frenzy is over, it's really hard to move the stock after that. I feel like the Funko Pops bubble is about to burst.
Yeah.
From what I'm seeing around.
Mm.
So that is my soapbox. I do want to just say one quick thing finally, and this goes back to episode 20 on Toy Power. I went back and re-listened to that. That is our analysis of premium collectibles. Now, just to point out that episode is quite old now.
Yep.
And I just wanted to reiterate to audiences the conclusion of that discussion, because we now know the outcome. And I think we were going back and listening to that conversation, we were very much at the point where, just to reiterate, premium collectibles you might get a clue for where I'm going with this conversation, but an online collectible retailer that had really good prices, but a lot of people were getting very upset because there was lack of communication and deliveries weren't being met by their estimated time of arrival. Where we kind of landed with our last episode, we were saying there's been delays, but there's nothing to suggest that he's not sending out items and not delivering on items. We now know the result of that. It was pretty much, at the end, a sham.
Yeah.
There was no intention to supply products. And the site now has shut down and looks like the business has gone under. And when I look back to my experience with premium collectibles, I know there's hundreds and hundreds of people on Facebook groups now, well in excess of 500 in one group where people have grievances. So this is probably like minimum 500 customers that have a problem that have gone to Facebook to try to get their money back. Scott Dwyer of Premium Collectibles is running a hashtag called Premium Collectibles Delivers. I was always skeptical of that. I can now say categorically they do not deliver and they haven't delivered. I got out of all my orders about 50% delivered, 50% wow. success rate. And out of that, about $4,000 worth of stock that was not delivered.
Did you get your money back?
I did get my money back through a Visa chargeback.
Right.
So not through Scott. Scott refused to pay any refunds.
Wow.
He was actually, it's kind of crazy, but he was directing people to do chargebacks with the bank. And I believe that a chargeback was costing him about $30 each time was one was coming through.
Yeah.
Because basically you're going back to Visa and saying the supplier didn't deliver my goods.
Yep.
It's a lot of work, particularly with the pre-order scenario because...
Well, but they were part of the issue also was they would take the full amount 100%. Of pre-order. Yep. 100% of the cost.
Yep, 100%. So, and there was stuff going on towards the end where it looked to me... Like he was basically going, what's getting released today? Oh, just chuck that up on my website, get money in. And I don't know whether he was actually placing those orders because there was one scenario where he put up a product for like less than the cost price. Oh. And people kind of called him out. They're like, how are you putting this up there for the price? And then he's like, oh, we increased that price, but I'll honor the orders that have been placed. And he never delivered on that line. Yeah, that, incidentally, was the Super 7 release of Master of the Universe, which never got released by him. So I wonder if towards the end he wasn't even placing orders and he was just putting up on the website and just hoping that the times would run out and people would lose the ability to do the chargeback process. So I'm just so happy now the site is gone and no one else can fall foul to this victim. Because I believe Premium Collectibles started off as a legitimate business.
Yeah.
I think it just struggled. And there was a loophole inherent in the pre-order system where he was taking people's cash and basically not having to deliver for a year and then not responding to emails, not meeting any obligations to provide refunds. And he almost uncovered maybe just through... his model, almost a loophole in the system. So my final shout out is to basically anyone that is, you know, transacting online, putting up money up front. That might be, you know, Kickstarter programs. If you read the fine print on Kickstarter, if your Kickstarter person doesn't provide the goods, don't try going crying to Kickstarter. They've got no obligation to refund you anything. Your deal is with the person who's providing those goods under the Kickstarter. So it's just a bit of a, and I won't go into some of my rant about some Kickstarters that I'm on at the moment. We might just see how they play out a little bit.
Yep.
But if you're putting in 100% of money up front, a year out from a product being delivered, you've got a pretty significant chance that you might not see that product ever get released.
Yeah,
so it's up to you to then chase it down.
So it's buyer beware.
Buyer beware, very much. But I think it's just really important to sort of bookend that episode 20 with these comments now.
Yeah,
just to sort of see where it landed. And a lot of people, they called it before I did. And they certainly, I know Cool Collectibles was one, Kai McFly from Cool Collectibles was certainly one that never bought from them and was always very skeptical and always trying to call them out for what they were. Big thank you to the Facebook groups. I think Cameron Mondelan was... really providing some good connections and information to people on how to go about the chargeback process. Yeah. But like I said, there were groups with 500-600 members. So some pretty significant numbers. At the end, if you went onto productreviews.com, at one point he had one positive review and about 120 negative reviews with one star. That the positive review's now gone. Like it's been taken, they're all negative. It's just like hundreds of negative reviews. So, you know, we were always very cautious coming on a podcast and speaking bad of a toy company without the proof. And the proof is and truly there now, so there's no cause for defamatory statements in this podcast. But I guess that was always, we were always very conscious of that with the podcast. So, yeah, that ends my soapbox.
Right.
This sort of is a theme now, because we're going to head on to what's on the pegs. So it does speak a little bit to your experience in retail. And I think it is what we want to do with what's on the peg is just almost have a bit of a historic record from a retail perspective of what's happening in the market at the moment. What are we seeing with the lines? Perhaps how much of it's out there?
And yeah, and well exactly what we'd like to see.
Yeah. What we're not seeing. So maybe Frank, we'll start with you. Have you been to a store lately and sort of what's the flavour of what's on the pegs at the moment?
Yeah, look, I was at Toys R Us just today. They had a bit of a 20% off sale over this weekend. And I had a look around. There was a lot of... I'll start with sort of the big three. Ninja Turtles, pretty much zero. And I guess at this point in time, not to be unexpected with the new... Toon sort of to debut later this year. They're just trying to run out whatever stock they've got left of the, I guess we'll now call it the old Nickelodeon show and stock. Transformers, there was a lot of the, not movie masterpiece, the movie premium line, I think, where it's essentially reused molds from some of the movie lines, but with movie accurate paints, and they looked amazing. You can get Grimlock that actually looks like Grimlock on the screen. Regardless of what you think of Michael Bay and his movie styles, the characters damn sure looked cool. Star Wars Black was an interesting one. Very little of it there. There seemed to be the retail space for it, but just it was gone. It was sold.
Just sold, yeah.
Yeah. The big one, of course, is still the Marvel Legends stuff. There's a big cardboard Thanos to greet you as you walk in the store. They had pretty much the full assortment of the first wave, which is Captain America, Spider-Man, and a few others. It was interesting that looked like it had been refreshed, because there was a stage before the movie where it was all full, and then a week later it was all gone as everyone, that was the first sightings of it. So it was nice to see that refresh. No sign of the Wave 2 stuff, which is got Ant-Man and the Wasp and a few others in there. That's sort of hitting some online stores, but certainly not on the pegs at this stage. Also the Voltron was the other one, the classics. It was done in the newer packaging, but they're meant to be, you know, reminiscent of the old 84
Voltron. Yep. Has now appeared. Ben caught that,
yeah,
and took some photos and shot them around, so that's pretty cool, because I think a lot of people will be after that version of Voltron.
I had one in my head. They're huge. Yep. Like, I reckon they're bigger than the original toys.
The Panache Place ones.
Yeah.
Darren, do you have anything to add to that from what you're seeing? Maybe more at a department store, Kmart, Target, Meijer. A
little bit here and there. The 80s Rocksteady and Bebop seem to be a tiny bit more plentiful than before. And when I say that, I mean that all three of us have been able to round those up. Taking some doing, but they're sort of filtering through, mainly at Kmart's and Target's at this stage, I believe. But great to see them coming out. There's some solo stuff starting to trickle through. We were talking before about it just sort of trickling in at this stage that with the film only, you know, mere days away from dropping, that there isn't much of a toy presence for it yet, which is really, really interesting, especially given how Hasbro sort of and other news outlets have indicated that maybe they got a little bit burnt on Rogue One stock, so maybe we're seeing a more conservative product run for Solo, which is, I think, fascinating. Mm-hmm. I guess on the DC front, there doesn't seem to be a lot. I did notice, and I think Trent did as well, that Toy World have got the Justice League action stuff in, which, you know, they're pretty cool. They're a smaller scale, but they're a pretty cool looking figure. It's good to see them sort of appearing anywhere. Haven't seen any new DC Multiverse for a while, which is always sad because I think that they're brilliant. But I have noticed that there is quite a bit of Marvel Legends stuff happening at the moment, as you'd expect, with both Infinity War and Deadpool 2 in cinemas. Great to see that stuff. And the Jurassic World stuff is really starting to take shape as well. With so many big films this year, I guess we're going to see a lot of movie tie-ins, which is good, and hopefully we'll keep products coming. Stuff I'd love to see here, I'm going to call it out and say Muckman from the Nick.
I think everyone wants to see Muckman. I don't think that's
line. So we want to see him drop sooner rather than later.
Not going to happen.
No, I know.
Frank held one in his hand.
I had one before.
Did you?
Yeah, before it went all crazy and you were seeing these insane
prices.
Where
did you find it?
Oh, this was months ago, to be honest. When the Nick line was much easier to find.
Yeah.
It would have been at the start of that wave. Oh, it must have been a Kmart, one of those.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just gone, and at the time I was like, I'll come back for it. It's not a turtle. It's not going to sell.
Oh.
If only I'd known, I would have.
If only you'd called me.
I would have been able to get the $15 in change out of my car right then and get it. But anyway.
Yeah, them's the breaks, sadly. But yeah, look, things I'd love to see, like I said, that DC Multiverse stuff. Always want to see more Star Wars bike series. Yeah, that sort of things. And just see more attention, love, care and attention provided from our retailers to toys and more of a push towards them.
Can anyone speak to Lego at all as far as that?
Sounds pretty solid from what I'm seeing. All the sort of Infinity War stuff, I think, broadly has popped up
at
a combination of retailers.
Yeah.
Even saw, I went shopping with Ben on Friday and we were in Meijer and he sort of picked up it was for the junior Lego set, so the easy to build sets. But he picked up an Incredibles set. There was the Underminer set.
Oh, nice.
From the original film. I think Underminer comes up at the end of that film. So some sort of cool stuff. Fair bit of variety. All the Jurassic World stuff seems to have shown up, including the mansion. Even things from the Batman Lego movie, like Bruce Wayne's, you know, Joker-fied mansion is there. Yep. The Arkham Asylum sort of is there. Some of those items are you know, out and about. So I think Lego is putting on a pretty good display at the moment.
Yeah, I think they are. I hope that people, obviously, you know, I don't want people to spend money that they would spend on necessities on it. I don't want to see people going without necessities, but obviously you hope that it sells and that people do buy it, because we know that Lego have been doing it tough as a company in recent times, and you want to see them come out of that. So hopefully that happens, because they are putting out some awesome product.
Definitely. All right, so that's good. That gives us a bit of a flavour as to what's happening on the pegs. If you've got any comments about what's happening in your local area, we would love to hear it. All right, it's time for our next segment, which is the toys that should have been. This is a segment where we go back and look at toy lines that were never made back in the day and try and pitch to the others a successful toy line that could be made. Talking generally about what Wave 1 might look like. And today, I've got the honor of looking at a very special property that's close to my heart, and that is the 1997 science fiction action film, The Fifth Element, by director Luc Besson. So we're going to jump into that. So it is The Fifth Element, and this is a story that takes us to Corbin Dallas, a retired elite commando who is thrust back into action when the mysterious Leeloo falls into the cab he is driving. Unaware that she is the genetically resurrected supreme being known as the Fifth Element, Dallas must gather the four stones and the Fifth Element to stop the annihilation of Earth from Mr. Shadow and his powerful ally, Jean-Baptiste Emmanuel Zorg, played by the one and only Gary Oldman.
So good.
Just a couple of things that I would have done in the line. This is an interesting one. Just to touch a little bit on the toy history of Fifth Element, there was a line proposed and there were some figures, prototype figures, that were sculpted back in the day. They never got the light of day, and I believe there were some issues with the licensing for the likenesses that were challenging. I'm not sure if that was the only thing that sort of got in their way. I understand that Gary Oldman, correct me if I'm wrong, anyone listening or anyone in the room, but Gary Oldman owns Zorg. Like, it's his character. So it's not like it's the studio character, but you have to go to him for his likeness. You need to go for him for the character.
Rights to the character.
To the character.
Did not know that.
Apparently. I could be wrong. I didn't fact check that at all. So feel free to get me if I got that one wrong. But it sounded like there were some challenges. They were done, if I'm thinking back to the prototypes I saw, there was definitely a Corbin Dallas and a Leeloo figure. They were sort of almost in that late 90s style where everything's almost pre-posed. They were almost caricatured somewhat, like a Playmates figure might be. Some of the proportions might be a little bit caricatured, but that's sort of the style that they went for in the prototype. And a couple of years ago, Super 7 and Funko, through their reaction line, did do a Kenner style of Fifth Element figures in that reaction style. So what I'm proposing is probably slightly different to either of these things that were proposed or ultimately made. I'm proposing this line would have come out as a film tie-in back in 97. The scale would have been 5 inches. Think more along the lines of Kenner's Terminator action figure line. More so than what Kenner was doing, say, in, you know, Jurassic Park and Waterworld. Slightly bigger than that, slightly more muscular. 7 points of articulation, neck, arms, at the hip to bend the legs and knees so that they could fit into any vehicles. The packaging, the figures would come on a card with a blister bubble. The image of the box would show a cityscape horizon of New York with the buildings on the horizon. You'd have the 5 energy blasts shooting upwards into a dark sky and the sort of silhouetted faces of Corbin Dallas, Leeloo, and Zorg atop the Fifth Element logo, surrounded by a rectangle, all done in yellow. Okay.
Very nice.
We're going to get into the figures. So Wave 1 would consist of 8 figures, each with accessories and a unique action feature, and the 7 points of articulation that I talked about. We would also get 3 vehicles. No playset for this line, which was something that sometimes Kenner would do in smaller run toy lines based on movies. Price point, $14.99 recommended retail price for the figures and $30 for the vehicles. So the first figure would, of course, be Corbin Dallas. And this is Corbin Dallas in his street gear. Corbin comes dressed in his orange singlet, black pants, and jacket. His accessories include a blaster, his trusty cat, the Floston Paradise sweepstakes prize, and an earth element stone with its pedestal. Squeeze his legs together for a quick draw action. Second figure is the Corbin Dallas battle damage figure. Comes in his battle damage tuxedo from the assault on Floston Paradise Hotel scene in the movie. Comes with blaster pistol, grenades, billiard balls, which serve no purpose, just like they do in the movie, and a multipass. The figure has a battle damage feature and a battle damaged flip head and removable battle damaged arm that goes from a fully sleeved tuxedo version to a damaged tuxedo version of his arm.
Me, Fifth Element, supreme being. Me, protect you.
Third figure is the Leeloo figure in her street outfit. So sorry, Davey, I'm not going for the bandages version. You get the black boots, golden tights with the white crop top and the orange suspenders. Comes with a blaster pistol, multipass, and fire stone and pedestal. Squeeze figure's left arm to perform a karate kick.
Handles adjustable for easy carrying. Good for riders and lefties. Breaks down on 4 parts, undetectable by x-ray. Ideal for quick, discreet interventions. A word on firepower. Titanium recharger. 3,000 round clip with bursts of 3 to 300. With the replay button, another Zorg invention, it's even easier.
Number 4 figure, Jean-Baptiste Emmanuel Zorg, as Gary Oldman puts it, or Zorg as I call him, comes dressed in his turquoise short shirt with pinstriped waistcoat from the arms deal scene that you just heard. Comes with his pet office elephant and ZF-1 assault weapon and bomb. The ZF-1 has a missile launching action feature as well. The elephant, it's that thing that kind of is in his office, you know, when he's choking on the cherry stone.
Yep.
And there's all these weird creatures, there's sort of elephant under there.
Nice.
The elephant comes with a color change action feature when dropped in ice water.
Hi.
Unbelievable!
Yeah, Yes, Chris Tucker in one of his finest roles. Absolutely brilliant as Rudy Rod. This is the fifth figure in the line, the Rudy Rod Fluston Paradise scene. He comes with his leopard print onesie with white tubular afro, with whatever that thing is that comes out the front of it. He comes with his microphone cane, a blaster, and that's the blaster that he inadvertently pulls on one of the bad guys' heads and blows him away. He comes with the water, stone, and pedestal. Squeeze legs together and both arms raise upward in a screaming panic action feature. Figure number six, Vito Cornelius in brown robes, comes with handcuffs, bartender robot, and air, stone, and pedestal. Squeeze legs together for a quick draw action feature. Or if you put a book in his hand, the quick preach action feature.
It's the first time anyone's ever said that statement, for sure.
Figure number seven is the Mangalore soldier. This is just a generic Mangalore soldier who comes with a repaint of Zorg's ZF-1 assault rifle, this time with a net shooting capture feature and interchangeable human head, which happens via a flip feature. This reveals the sort of Agnok head that we get in the start of the weapons demonstration scene. And any guesses for the last figure to round out the eight? There are some contenders. There's some other key figures that... The Diva figure was one that Super 7 chose to do. I didn't go down that path because I didn't think Kenner was big sort of into maybe secondary female characters back in the day.
I think that would be a safe bet.
I went with the Mondo Sharwin, which I love the design of. If you think back to the opening sequence with Luke Perry, it's the big, large, robotic sort of chicken-like thing that come down and take the fifth element back out and take it back to space. Okay. And then they get shot down in the scene trying to return it by the Mangalores. So it's essentially like a big, large robotic chicken is the best way I can describe it. This one comes with vac metal paint applications and a light-up eye features through lead piping in the head. Comes with interchangeable hands. One of the hands has a key, and the other, like a key on his finger, very Inspector Gadget style, and one comes with a crushed hand. Moving on to the vehicles. The vehicles come packaged in sealed boxes, come with instruction sheets, self-applied stickers, and cardboard inserts. The first vehicle is the taxi, the flying taxi cab that Corbin Dallas pilots. Yellow upper, silver lower with black and white check pattern trim. Comes with break apart roof, rotating side panel to expose bullet damage, and a storage trunk with a hidden weapons cache. Includes five assault weapons, including pistol, rifle, knife, sword, and grenade launcher. Seats two. The box has the same design as the single card figure with the graphics, and depicts a shot of the cab soaring through the sky with the city below, featuring Corbin and Lilu in the two front seats. Even though that's never how it plays out in the movie, I always remember the Kenner boxes weren't quite screen accurate. So, and that's how the vehicle would fit them both in the front seats. They would be pictured being pursued by the police, and the image would be illustrated and vaguely resembles the actors, but not photorealistically. And I'm putting it that Kenner wasn't actually able to acquire the full likenesses. So they're just slightly off.
Yeah.
The second vehicle would be the New York City police car. Utilizing the same broad sculpt, it has additional police sirens at the top. And the vehicle includes mounted machine guns and a missile launcher. Press button for light and sound feature on the sirens, and it actually comes with an exclusive police officer figure with removable helmet in a window box. And the final vehicle of this line is Zorg's ZFX one-man fighter. This only appears briefly in the film, but is essentially the vehicle or the spaceship that he uses to fly to the Fluston Paradise Hotel. And when he confronts the guards and they're trying to send him back, get back, get back, there's a bomb in the hotel. And he blows them all down, mows them all down. He goes, I know, I put it there. So that's the final vehicle. It comes with one seater, just sits one figure. It contains a missile launcher, a storage area for the stones, which are, like I said, sold separately with the figures, and a battle damage flip panel. Also contains the bomb accessory. That is my proposed line. Any questions or thoughts?
Oh, that's nice. Like, you've covered all aspects of the film. You've got, like, the actual, you know, the stones themselves. You've got the accessories match really well what's sort of seen on screen and stuff. And the you think about the sort of time frame we're talking, being able to use the same mold for the cab and the police car, brilliant. Like, that's how they would have done it.
That they're close enough designs
close enough that you to could get away with it. Yeah, we're talking 97, you said.
Yeah,
that's how they do it. The flip panels, that's a great idea. Like, that's... Yeah.
Well, that scene of when all the police are lined up sort of in the side street and the cab comes past and they just shoot at it and it just takes all that damage and sort of floats off. I thought it would be great to recreate that scene.
Yeah. You do have to wonder if, like, you know, the chase or the con exclusive would be the iconic, you know, Mila Jovovich in the straps.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one because that... Here, a lot of people would probably... That's the more iconic version.
Yeah, that's the version most people associate.
Yeah, with the film, yeah.
But I just couldn't help but think that Kenner probably wouldn't have done that as a figure.
No, I don't think that would
be. In 97.
Well, hey, if they can make Slave Leia...
Yeah,
that's true, but I would submit...
We're talking 90s by this stage, I suppose.
Yeah. But when you say Slave Leia, I'm picturing you talking about Power of the Force 2 or Power of the Jedi or whatever...
She never got... Did she get one in the original line?
No, she never got one in the original line.
No, that's true.
So I'm thinking when Frank says that, he's talking about the 90s Power of the Force 2 or Power of the Jedi, whichever one she came out in that relaunch.
Yeah.
But I would submit that figure was aimed very much at adults, whereas I'm guessing Trent's pitching this as something that's aimed at kids.
Yeah, it would be. Yeah, that's
the whereas Slave Leia would have been aimed at... people that grew up with the original vintage Star Wars toy line, when they got a bit older, wished they had it, but because Kenner never made it back in the day, now's your chance.
Yeah,
in your Power of the Jedi, Power of the Force 2 line.
Just speaking to that costume, the last thing I'll say about it is when we were at San Diego Comic-Con a few years ago, we were waiting in the lineup for Hall H, so a lot of hours sort of spent... waiting and not much happening. And then there was a rather large, bearded, hairy man, not exactly in the peak of physical condition, who wore that costume and was just, like, he worked it. Do you know what I mean? He was getting all the comments, all the wolf whistles and everything. And he's just like, yeah, here I am, world, come at me. And it was this amazing mixture of like, oh my God. And then you're like, oh my God. Like,
kudos for going for it.
Exactly. That was, well done.
I have a memory from San Diego where there were three layers that had just somehow accumulated together for a photo shoot. I don't think it was necessarily intentional, but yeah, it was, I guess they're the finer points of San Diego, aren't they? Sort of thing just drops in your lap, so wasn't complaining at all about that.
Did you have any designs on Wave 2, Wave 3?
No, I figured it would have been a one-line release. I don't think there would have been legs in it. And quite often with movie timelines that were mid of the... Like, Fifth Element is a great film and I love it. And it's up there with my top films. But I think it would have hit and it would have gone. It wouldn't have stayed around things like Jurassic Park or...
Yeah.
Batman type things.
Most movie lines, even the successful ones, only run a couple of years and get a couple of waves out of them. Yeah. If you're thinking that this one might have been a one wave line, then yeah, I mean, that seems perfectly reasonable to me. It probably would have been. It's a film that I think, by and large, wasn't it? Despite how it would have been marketed as a toy line, wasn't really a kids' film.
No.
Yeah. So a lot of people would have appreciated it. That would have been a little bit older, and dare I say, without offending anyone, perhaps, you know, at that age, that I'm too cool for toys.
Yeah.
Even if I were the kind of person who was, like, later on finding their way back to toys.
Yeah, I agree.
They would have been at that phase. They're the kind of people... That would have really appreciated it when it came out.
Yeah, I reckon this line would have struggled to sell, to be honest. I put it in a category of action figure lines like Waterworld. Like, I don't think, yeah. I mean, Waterworld isn't really a kid's film.
It's not a kid's
film. Not a kid's film, but it got a toy line.
You tend to think when they did Waterworld, and I say this with absolute respect because I enjoy the film immensely, that they were banking on it being like a Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, because it was Kevin Costner again.
Yeah.
And they'd had, obviously, Kenna had that line as well and had some success with it and thought maybe they'd get a similar result with Waterworld.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and I think this is a great era because I think this is a lost kind of part of the toy industry now, whereas toy companies just put their money on safe bets for the most part. Like you might have some
big franchises.
Yeah, big franchises where all the money's going.
We've talked about this many times. You're absolutely right. It was an era of experimentation.
Yeah, that's right. And
were taken.
They didn't necessarily know what was going to be the next big hit. They didn't want to miss out if something was going to be the next big hit. So they were looking, and there was so much competition in the market, probably sort of starting to wane a little bit in the late 90s. Almost forced to have a crack at these properties.
Yep.
Whereas now they don't really need to because there's only two major players, maybe three.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. Did you have any ideas of a play set? I know you said you deliberately didn't because they're not sort of Kenner's style. But
I did have an idea that my first idea was basically the Floston Paradise shootout scene, if you want to sort of call it that.
Yep.
So you'd be talking kind of more of a diorama than anything. That would have made the most sense as an interactive playset. Yeah. You could have had, you know, that's where the battle sequences happen. The one I would have loved to get was basically Corbin Dallas's apartment, like, you know, with the fold-out bed and his, like, cigarette dispenser where he's trying to quit and it's, like, all filter and only a tiny bit of cigarette. I wanted to include that as an action feature, but I'm like, there's no way I can get a cigarette dispenser into a toy line. I could get it into an adult toy. I couldn't put it into a Kenner Kids toy line.
Yeah.
But that's what I would love, like, having his apartment. You could recreate the scene where he's trying to hide everyone, like he's trying to hide the commander and he's trying to hide Lilo and she goes into the shower and that great scene. And it's got, you know, the I'm a meat popsicle scene where they get the fake Corbin. But I don't think that would have made a toy. I don't think that would have made a sort of... So I think, you'd probably be down the lines of something that happens in Floston Paradise.
The only other sort of iconic setting that jumps into my mind is that the end of the film where the stones are brought together and stuff.
Good call.
But again, I'm thinking, like, how do you make that exciting for kids, essentially?
It's essentially a pretty plain brown sort of temple with bricks and sand. Yep. But that might make sense. I did think about the stones triggering some sort of feature. Mm. So, like, maybe, you know, when you put the stone on the pedestal, it does a sound or it does a light up thing. But I just think it was getting too complicated for what would be the play value of that.
Yep.
I couldn't sort of think it through, so I just went with the more action feature kicking, launching type style.
Yeah.
But that's beautiful. It. That rounds it out. So if we're good for time, we will wrap this episode of Toy Power. We'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in and following us again. And particular shout out to our Patreons, which are Lux Toy Collector, Brett G. We've got Jose Gonzalez and Chris Wisdom. And thank you very much for all your contributions on our page and our group chat. They've been great. On that note, we'll say a big thank you and we will see you around the toy aisles.
Thank you one and all. It's been awesome. And until next time, good journey.
You can find the Toy Power team at all the usual online places. Facebook.com/ToyPowerPodcast. At Toy Power Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram. Or have your say and email us, toypowerpodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show on both iTunes and Stitcher, and please leave us a review. Otherwise, we just assume we're awesome.
We are a proud member of the Giant Size Team Up Network. Check out all the awesome shows on this awesome network full of okay people. Want to learn more? Go to GiantSizeTeamUp.com, where you can find us and a whole lot more awesome shows. Well, they're not more awesome than us, but they're